checklist, Trumbaugh said as he handed the beacon to Jamie. Jamie nodded and slid down the visor of his helmet. Trumbaugh riffled through the safety checklist quickly but thoroughly, making certain Jamie's suit was correctly sealed and all its equipment functioning properly. "Okay, pal," he said, tapping Jamie on the back of his helmet. His voice was muffled by the helmet's insulation. "I'm going into the airlock," Jamie spoke into the microphone built into the helmet between the bottom of the visor and the neck ring. "Copy," he heard Dezhurova's voice acknowledge. "Wait one. I have an amber on the UV." The airlock ceiling held a battery of ultraviolet lamps, which turned on automatically as the airlock was pumped down to vacuum. The UV light was supposed to sterilize the outside of the hard suits, killing any microbes clinging to their surfaces, so the explorers could not contaminate the world outside with microscopic life from Earth. The UV was also supposed to kill any possible bat contamination on the suits when the explorers came back into the rover. "Backup is in the green," Dezhurova's voice said crisply in Jamie's earphones. "I'll check out the primary circuit while you are outside." "Okay." "Entering the airlock now." The airlock was no bigger than a telephone booth, barely large enough to fit a suited man. Clutching the stubby rod of the geology meteorology beacon in one gloved hand, Jamie pressed the control stud beside the outer hatch with his other. He heard the pump chug to life as the telltale light on the panel went from green to amber. The sound of the pump and the slight hissing of air dwindled to nothing, although Jamie could still feel the pump's vibration through the thick soles of his boots. In a minute even that ceased, and the panel light went to red. The airlock was now in vacuum. The ultraviolet light was invisible to his eyes, of course, although he thought it made the red stripes on his sleeves fluoresce slightly. Jamie leaned on the control stud, and the outer hatch slid open. He stepped carefully down the metal rung and out onto the red sand of Mars. He knew it was nonsense, but Jamie felt free and happy outside by himself. The barren red sands of Mars stretched all around him, out to a rugged, undulating horizon that seemed almost too close for comfort. The edge of the world, the beginning of infinity. The sky was a yellowish tan along that horizon, shading slowly toward blue as he looked up toward the small, strangely weak sun. "Good-sized crater off to the left," he spoke into the helmet mic. "Looks recent. Fresh rock along its rim." They were following the route he had taken during the improvised jaunt to the Grand Canyon 6 years earlier, the excursion that had nearly killed them all. The excursion that had discovered living Martian lichen at the bottom of Tithonium Chasma. Jamie had half expected to see traces of the wheel tracks from that trip, but the wind-driven sand had covered them over completely. They had not bothered to plant beacons along the way 6 years ago. They had been in too much of a hurry for that. Now Jamie corrected that oversight. He pulled on the rod, extending it out to its full 2 meters, then planted it firmly in the red, dusty soil. Not soil, he reminded himself. Regolith. Soil is honeycombed with living things, worms, bugs, bacteria. This rusty iron sand of Mars was devoid of any trace of life. The stuff was loaded with superoxides, like powdered bleach. When the earliest automated landing vehicles first sampled the surface and could not find even traces of organic molecules in it, hopes for discovering life on Mars plummeted. Jamie smiled to himself inside his helmet as he worked the pointed end of the beacon deeper into the ground. Mars surprised them all, he thought. We found life. What new surprises will we find this time? Below the superoxide level there might be colonies of bacteria that never saw sunlight, bacteria that digested rock with water from the permafrost. Geologists had been stunned to find such bacteria deep underground on Earth. Possum Craig was drilling for similar Martian organisms. Jamie was sweating by the time he got the pole set firmly enough into the ground to satisfy himself. Reaching up, he unfolded the solar panels, then clicked on the beacon's radio transmitter. "Sing your song," Jamie said silently to the beacon. A totem for the scientists, he realized. The instrumentation built into the slim pole would continuously measure ground tremors, heat flows from the planet's interior, air temperature, wind velocity, and humidity. Of the 100-some beacons they had planted during the first expedition, more than 30 were still functioning after 6 years. Jamie wanted to find those that had failed and see what had happened to them. But not now, he told himself, not today. He went back to the rover and stepped up to the open airlock hatch. He turned around and gazed out at the rock-strewn landscape once more before closing the hatch. That fresh-looking crater beckoned to him, but he knew they had no time for it. Not yet. Jamie gazed out at Mars. Barren, almost airless, colder than Siberia or Greenland, or even the South Pole. Yet, it still looked like home to him. Diary entry. None of the others seem to understand what danger we are in. This is an alien world, and all we have to protect us is a thin shell of plastic or metal. If that shell is ruptured, even a tiny pinprick, we will all die in agony. I was a fool to come here, but the rest of them are even bigger fools. They are a fingernail's width away from death, and they act as if they don't know it, or don't care. The fools. Overnight, Sol 6 and 7. Actually, said Trudy Hall, most scientific work is crashingly boring. The four of them were sitting in the lower bunks in the module's midsection, with a narrow fold-out table between them, and the remains of their dinners on the plastic trays before them. The two women sat on one side of the table, Trumbull and Jamie on the other. Most of any kind of work is a bore, said Trumbull, reaching for his glass of water. I worked in my old man's office when I was a kid. Talk about boring.
That's what they say about flying for the Air Force, Stacy Dezhurova added, straight-faced. Long hours of boredom punctuated by moments of sheer terror.
They all laughed. I know we could move a lot faster if we didn't have to plant the beacons, Jamie said. But they're important to...
Oh, don't be so serious, Hall said, looking surprised. I wasn't complaining. I was merely making a philosophical point.
The English are very deep, Trumbull said, grinning across the table at her. Really into philosophy and all that.
Rather, agreed Hall.
Jamie made a smile for them.
We have made good progress, Dezhurova said. We will get to within striking distance of the canyon's edge by sundown tomorrow.
We could make it to the edge itself if we spaced out the beacons a little more, Trumbull added. Say 50 clicks instead of 30. Jamie felt his brows knit slightly. 30 clicks means we stop once every hour, more or less. Trumbull turned on the cot to face Jamie, his grin knowing, certain.
Yeah, but if we spread them out to every hour and a half, we could save 6-7 stops tomorrow. I checked it out on the computer. We'll make a hell of a lot better time.
Hall's expression turned thoughtful.
How would that affect the data stream?
Trumbull shrugged. Not much. We picked 30 clicks pretty much arbitrarily, right? Stop once an hour, and the rover's top speed isn't much more than 30 kilometers per hour, right?
So, if we space the beacons out every 50 clicks, will you still get the data you want? Hall asked.
Jamie studied her face across the narrow table from him. Her gray-blue eyes were focused on Trumbull. Her chin was slightly pointed, her facial bones sculpted almost like a fashion model's. She had been a runner back on Earth. Even on a long flight to Mars, she had jogged around the spacecraft's outer passageway for hours on end during her free time. Trumbull waved a hand in the air.
Sure. 30 clicks, 50 clicks, what's the difference?
He was facing Hall, but he glanced sideways toward Jamie. Taking in a breath to give himself a moment to consider, Jamie said, Maybe you're right, Dex. Spacing out the beacons a bit more won't hurt all that much. Trumbull's eyes widened momentarily. Quickly, he added, And we could make better time getting to the canyon. Jamie nodded. Why not? Good suggestion. Trumbull's grin seemed more triumphant than grateful. While the others took turns using the lavatory and getting into their sleep coveralls, Jamie went forward.